Thank you for having me, and you can never be too Jewish.
Shalom. And welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Today, Rabbi's guest is Yerachmiel Stern, executive director of an organization that provides psychological counseling service for ultra-Orthodox Jews. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on 2 Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. 2 Jewish is paid for by 2 Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2 Jewish.
Shalom. I've been reflecting on disastrous fires this week for obvious reasons. As a native of Los Angeles, where I lived for the first 25 years of my life and where my parents lived until just 5 years ago, and I visited them very often, the catastrophic firestorms that hit my hometown have been shocking. This is likely to be the single worst fire in terms of property loss in American history. And seeing images of neighborhoods that I knew well completely annihilated, including a synagogue my dad used to serve as cantor, and where I once sang in a concert, is just terribly sad. It also reminds me of two close calls I've personally had with fires. One just last summer on the island of Maui, where we missed being caught up in the Lahaina fire by just a couple of hours, and were marooned without power about 2 miles from ground zero for several days. The other memory is much older. It goes back to Santa Barbara, California, when I was the cantor at the synagogue there, Congregation B'nai B'rith, back in 1990. That Santa Barbara fire not only came within a mile or so of my condo, but it swirled all around the temple and burned part of the outdoor chapel. About 20 of our congregants there lost their homes in the conflagration, which destroyed over 400 homes. To put it in proportion, the LA fires this week destroyed perhaps 2,000 homes. But that Santa Barbara fire, while not as devastating as the LA fires have been, was no small event. I remember the feelings of fear and concern as the fire approached our neighborhood. Initially, it looked as though the temple building itself, located in a lovely spot near San Marcos Pass, overlooking the canyon with views of the mountains and out to the ocean, it looked like the temple was going to be in the path of the fire and would burn. I tried to get back to the synagogue to help save the Torahs and other sacred items, but the fire department had closed the road. Courageously, our Catholic caretaker at the time and his wife, Marianne and Wanda Grodel, loaded the Torahs into the temple van and drove literally through a wall of fire to safety. The fire turned eventually. We were able to get back to the building the next morning. Amid fears the fire would return, a few of us elected to stay at the temple, climb up on the roof, and hose it down to prevent flying embers from igniting the building. Fortunately, firefighters got the blaze under control before it came back to finish the destruction. In the end, the Santa Barbara fire had ravaged the road, San Antonio Creek Road it was called, that the synagogue was located on. Nearly all the beautiful homes located there were gone, burned to the foundations. There is no comparable experience to discovering that all of your possessions, save the clothes on your back, have just gone up in smoke. Friends lost everything they owned, including pets and the photographic memories of their lives, as well, of course, as family heirlooms, artworks, valuables. One friend lost his nearly completed dissertation in those pre-cloud storage days. Besides their pets, what people really missed the most turned out to be their photographs, their memories. I have one particularly enduring recollection of that fire. It was that while nearly all the homes there were totally burned on that road, the 4 or 5 religious institutions on the same road were essentially undamaged. Our synagogue, the Greek Orthodox Church, other Christian churches, all had been in the path of the fire, and somehow all survived intact, with virtually no destruction. We concluded that perhaps the answer was simply that whatever you believe, you should keep on believing and practicing. Now, in this Los Angeles fire, of course, houses of worship have not been spared, including a temple. Our prayers and thoughts are with the residents who've lost their homes and businesses, their memories, and their livelihood. We continue to be grateful to those who put their lives on the line to fight those fires. It should be clear to everybody by now that the impact of global warming, as predicted, is making all of these natural disasters far more intense, worse, increasing the severity of the wild weather swings that cause fires, floods, hurricanes, tornadoes, and tsunamis to devastate more and more terribly. We can only hope that our species is able to take the corrective action essential to mitigate the awful consequences of events like these terrible LA fires. To play us in this morning, kind of on the subject, here's a text from the Psalms. Out of the depths I called upon you, God. Hear my prayer and redeem me. Mima Makim, in a setting by the Idan Reichel Project.
למשמע כל צחוקי
נאנו נאנו נאה נאנו נאנו נאה קנצה לינגודאי נאנו נאנו נאה נאנו נאנו נאה קנצה לינגודאי
ממעמקים קעתי אלייך בואי אליי מול ירח מאיר דרכך שוב אליי נפרסו ורמסו מול מגע של ידייך באוזנייך לוחש שואל זה קורא לך הלילה, תקשיבי, נשאר בקול אלייך אל חלומך. מי שם נפשו שתהיי מאושרת, מי ישים יד ויבנה ביתך. מי ייתן חייו ישימה מתחתייך, מי כעפר לרגלייך יחיה. מי יאהבך עוד מכל אוהבייך, מי מכל רוח. עלי אצילך ממעמקים
נאנו נאנו נאה נאנו נאנו נאה קנצה לינגודאי נאנו נאנו נאה נאנו נאנו נאה קנצה לינגודאי
ממעמקים קראתי אלייך בואי אליי מול ירח מאיר דרכך שוב אליי נפרסו ונמסו מול מגע של ידייך באוזנייך לוחש זה קורה לך הלילה, תקשיבי, נשאר בקול אלייך אל חלומך. מי שם נפשו שתהיי מאושרת, מי ישים יד ויבנה ביתך. מי ייתן חייו ישימה מתחתייך, מי כעפר לרגלייך יחיה. מי יאהבך עוד מכל אוהבייך, מי מכל רוח רעה.
That was the Idan Reichel Project, Mima Amakim. Out of the depths I call upon you, God. We pray and hope that those who lost their homes in these awful fires and those who lost their businesses rise from the depths with God's help and ours. Our guest on Too Jewish this morning is a therapist who works in the ultra-Orthodox Frum communities in Brooklyn. He's the executive director of a network of counseling services called Pesach Tikva. Find out just how he deals with the inherent resistance to seeking help from anyone but a rabbi in the ultra-Orthodox world. We'll meet Yerachmiel Stern in a moment when he joins us as we return on Too Jewish. We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Yerachmiel Stern is a licensed clinical social worker, a therapist, who is the executive director of Pesach Tikva, a system, really, of mental health providers within the ultra-Orthodox community, the Frum community in Brooklyn. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Thank you for having me on.
You know, I think that for a lot of people who are not within the Frum community, who are not ultra-Orthodox or Hasidic, the idea that Orthodox people, ultra-Orthodox people, would go in for therapeutic counseling, for psychological counseling from anybody but a rabbi seems unlikely. Can you explain the approach?
Right. So, you know, for a long time, that was the case where either needing an endorsement from a rabbi or just seeking the actual counseling from a rabbi was the landscape for many, many years in the ultra-Orthodox community. At times, people would go seek counseling in private practice, sort of hush-hush in private, and or they'd go to a clinic if it was a real mandated case, you know, it was a real case that had nothing, it was sort of out of their autonomy if they were going or not. But as the years have evolved and mental health has become, I guess, less stigmatized or slightly less stigmatized, the ultra-Orthodox community, the yeshivish, Hasidish community have become more willing, shall we say, to hear about it, deal with it, go for help. It's not, it doesn't happen seamlessly, but it happens much more now that they'll go deal with their issues in a more mainstream capacity.
I have to say, it's not as though all rabbis get a strong background in therapy or the principles involved. So I would think that it's a very valuable perspective you bring. You must also have to balance that with traditional teachings and Talmudic wisdom on subjects. How do you find that balance?
Yeah. So look, we're fortunate. Our great Torah has a lot of teachings that are very transformative. They actually are, a lot of them are the underpinnings for psychology. I believe, and a great therapist knows how to employ this, as long as you're not, you know, pushing an agenda or it's preaching a certain ideology, but you're just taking a concept that the Torah discusses, I think that's where it's been most successful in sort of borrowing these concepts from the Torah itself. That's where it's reigned the most successful in the therapeutic room. There's no reason to avoid key neutral topics that are not politically charged or agenda charged. And the Torah is full of those just neutral concepts that have powered the world of thought. And I think a great therapist knows how to put that forth in the therapy room.
We will talk much more with Yerachmiel Stern about doing counseling in the ultra-Orthodox world for Frum Jews when we come back in just a moment here on Two Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this winter. Established 6 years ago by a great congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everybody throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary in person. Call 520-276-5675. Religious school is available for school-age children and grandchildren. Join us in our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tikes experience, confirmation and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Beit Simcha services, class, and events open to everyone Friday night. Services are at 6:30 p.m., our Shabbat evening celebration services. always followed by a delicious Oneg Shabbat and always homemade challah. Saturday morning, Torah studies at 9 a.m. Shabbat morning services and Torah reading are with at 10 a.m., followed by a delicious Kiddush, all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. You can also come to services on our Facebook page. It's Beit Simcha Tucson, Beitsimcha Tucson. All of our services are in person and virtual. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are available live and on Zoom. You can access those. Go to our website, Beit Simcha Tucson, Beitsimcha Tucson.org. For more information about Beit Simcha to come to services, religious school, and Torah tikes, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, and all of our services, go to Beit Simcha Tucson, Beitsimcha Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, at Beit Simcha, the fastest growing Jewish congregation in all of southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O, JewishRadio18@gmail.com. Or visit our website, TooJewishRadio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website, T-O-O, JewishRadio.com, TooJewishRadio.com. Or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 250,000 downloads on Podbean. And now on Spotify. Post a rating, review Too Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments help.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation, known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen. 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, you came back from a trip not too long ago, and as usual, you visit Jewish places wherever you go. There is a perception that maybe it's more dangerous to do Jewish tourism these days with the rise of anti-Semitism all around the world, but that wasn't necessarily your experience.
Not at all, and it may be that unwittingly, I picked several exceptional countries where there has virtually never been any violent anti-Semitism of any sort. The group convened for a welcome dinner in Vienna, and Vienna is a city about which many American Jews have strong and completely misguided feelings. They imagine that it's a hotbed of anti-Semitism and that there's no Jews left. There's, in fact, quite a large and active Jewish community there. There are lots of different synagogues of different stripes. There's an active communal life.
I actually know the Reform rabbi there. I mean, you know, there's stuff. There's Jewish life.
There's kosher restaurants. There's a lot of Jewish tourism. It's a wonderful city. But that wasn't really on our trip. We just met, had a welcome dinner there, and the next day we got on a plane for Sarajevo. Okay, so Sarajevo is the capital of Bosnia-Herzegovina, and Bosnia for centuries was part of the Ottoman Empire. A large percentage of the population there is Muslim. A significant percentage is Orthodox Christians, and a smaller but still significant percentage are Roman Catholics. Now, Roman Catholics, particularly countries where they are alone in power, historically have been more anti-Semitic and more tending to violence against Jews than Orthodox countries or even Islamic countries, for that matter, over the long term of history. Jews under Islamic rule fared very well over 1,500 years.
Mostly they did until fairly recently, to be honest.
Until the 20th century and the creation of the State of Israel. You know, by the way, we're talking off mic about the trustworthiness of news sources. A lot of my American friends think that the BBC is Torah Messinae. It's the word of God, and it's much more objective than American media. In fact, the BBC recently did a piece on the emerging situation in Syria, and they referred to the incredibly diverse population, and in doing so, they mentioned a large and vibrant Jewish community. There are four Jews left in Syria.
Yeah, there's like no Jews. None. Four. Four actual humans.
Yeah. 100 years ago was a completely different story.
Of course.
But today, there are four. So be wary of the BBC as well. All of you need to be taken with a grain of salt. But anyway, the trip I led was specifically a Jewish heritage tour. We did look at other stuff, but we focused on like the Sarajevo Haggadah, the main Jewish museum, the old synagogue, the current synagogue. Even the most paranoid people in the group felt no sense of threat or menace from the locals. We didn't take any active precautions. And to me, it was noteworthy that all these Jewish sites are unpoliced. I mean, in our country or in Canada or in Australia, there would unfortunately have to be police.
There'd be security.
Or some private security sort of something. Not in Bosnia. Then we went to Thessaloniki, which was a city that was once overwhelmingly Jewish. And there may have been some resentment of Jews for their wealth and influence in the past in Thessaloniki, because Jews made it so that the port didn't work on Shabbat and Jewish holidays. They made it so banks and department stores were closed on Shabbat and Jewish holidays, which meant they were one of the first countries in Europe with two-day weekends, because they couldn't work on Saturday because of the Jews, and they couldn't work on Sunday because of the Christians. But there were two policemen in front of the Jewish museum, and there was like a gun check as we entered the Jewish museum. But there was no other sign, and again, there wasn't any sense of menace. And the place where there was the least sense of menace was Georgia, where in the capital, there's a whole old Jewish quarter that has a Chabad house, a main synagogue. They had a large communal sukkah where people were sitting and eating. And this whole area was unsupervised by police. There was no need to. There's like never been violent anti-Semitism in Georgia throughout its thousands of years of history.
Wow.
So I think the perception that there's a rise in anti-Semitic violence and episodes in Europe is mostly a projection. I mean, there is a rise in the U.S. and there's a rise in Canada, and there's been a recent rise in Australia. But none of those are European countries.
Fascinating. Tom, well, it's good to hear that things are not nearly as bad as people perceive them to be, and we hope they get better. Thanks so much. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. You know, whenever I go to someone's house and they say, make yourself at home, the first thing I do is throw them out. Because I don't like visitors. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we begin reading Exodus, second book of the Torah, the great Torah portion of Shmot. I admit I'm a little bit biased. This was my own bar mitzvah Torah portion a few years back. But certainly Shmot is one of the great sections of the Torah. It begins with a kind of coda on Genesis, recounting how the first family of Bereishit, made up of Jacob and his many sons and their descendants, moved down to Egypt, where Joseph is the effective ruler of the country. They settle in Goshen, in the northeastern part of the Nile Delta of Egypt, and they flourish there. And then the fateful events that set the future of our people begin. Joseph and his generation pass away, A new dynasty takes over in Egypt, which doesn't remember Joseph and all of his contributions. The Israelites are now viewed differently. As they grow in numbers and wealth, the new pharaoh worries. These immigrants might serve as a fifth column, these Hebrews, in the event of an invasion. They speak a different language, worship a different god. Their hair is curlier, their nose is larger, their skin a bit darker, perhaps. They have funny accents. They look like trouble. Isn't it interesting how history is a way of repeating itself? How the same negative stereotypes and wicked ways of looking at immigrants recur? And so the Egyptians enslave the Israelites, putting them to work as unpaid slave labor, building store cities, not pyramids, store cities, for the royal government. They set up overseers called taskmasters, establish work quotas, push them harder and harder, essentially try to work them to death. When that fails, the Hebrews are tougher than the Egyptians expect. They decide simply to kill all the male babies, eliminating the whole masculine population in a generation. But the Jews are too crafty for their oppressors. In the tribe of Levi, later to be the priestly tribe, a woman hides her newborn baby boy until his cries are too loud to be stifled. She puts him into a tiny ark, a new Noah, if you will, and sets him a sail in the Nile River. And when the Pharaoh's daughter pulls him from the river and names him Moses, well, a remarkable personal story truly begins. Shmod tells of the early life and adolescence of Moses, his instinctive outrage at injustice, his hot temper, his exile to the Sinai. It shows him mature, marry, father children in the desert. And then it takes him through the dramatic narrative of experiencing the burning bush, an encounter with the commanding God that brings him back into the crucible of history and leads him to become the greatest liberator the world has ever known. Finally, the text returns him to Egypt to meet his brother Aaron and shape his destiny and ours. There's almost too much in this portion to grasp, encapsulating as it does so many of the formative tales of our people's religious history. Most importantly, unlike so many other traditions' hero stories, Exodus does not make Moses a god or a perfect paragon. He is just a man, a great, flawed man, born into a conflict not of his own making, rising to greatness through trial and error, learning both how to follow God and how to lead people towards justice and freedom. It is a great story, but more than that, it is a powerful lesson. Moses becomes the model for every truly great leader thereafter because of his very humanity, his humanness, his ability to empathize with the suffering of the downtrodden, utilize the power of righteousness to accomplish everything. May we also come to understand that we can accomplish great things in spite of our own imperfections and limitations if we just choose to fight for justice, for freedom, for truth. When we come back in a moment, our guest, Yerachmiel Stern, explains the complexities of providing psychological counseling to Frum families and just how he and his therapists navigate assisting people in the ultra-Orthodox world, balancing therapeutic principles with the wisdom of Torah. Find out just how they do it when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from Rabbi Sam Kohan.
A long-standing synagogue in the Los Angeles area was destroyed by the raging wildfires, as were so many buildings throughout the LA region during the shocking firestorms last week. The Pasadena Jewish Center and Temple, I remember singing in a cantorial concert there long ago, burned for hours. Fire spilled out of the Eaton Canyon fire, fueled by strong winds. The 400 or so family congregation built and utilized the mission-style building, which had a wooden Torah ark carved by the Jewish artist Peter Krasno, and several other buildings. They'd been there since the 1920s. My own father, Rabbi and Cantor Baruch Kohan, was the cantor at the Pasadena Jewish Center for a couple of years in the late 1940s. It's a massive center, a TV reporter said, broadcasting from the scene. It's just crumbling with the intensity of the heat. Flames shot through the synagogue's roof in the video. It looks like the concrete and metal is just melting. It's a total loss. The Torah scrolls were rescued from the building before it was consumed. At least five separate wildfires were stoked by the tremendous Santa Ana winds after severe dryness following a year of extraordinary growth because of wetness in the area. In Pacific Palisades, Kehilat Israel, large Reconstructionist temples survived, although many members, including both rabbis, lost their homes. Peter Yarrow, one-third of the folk pop group Peter, Paul, and Mary, died last week at the age of 86. The only Jewish member of the trio, Yarrow famously wrote his popular Hanukkah song in 1982.
Light one candle for the Maccabee children, with thanks their light didn't die. Light one candle for the pain they endured when their right to exist was denied. Light one candle for the terrible sacrifice justice and freedom demand. But light one candle for the wisdom to know when the peacemaker's time is at hand. Don't let the light go out, it's lasted for so many years. Don't let the light go out, let it shine through our love and our tears.
Light one candle has become a standard. Peter, Paul, and Mary's songs were part of the soundtrack of the civil rights and anti-Vietnam War movements. Yarrow co-wrote the group's most enduring song, Puff the Magic Dragon, based on a poem by Lenny Lipton. Yarrow swore it had nothing to do with drugs. The trio joined other notable acts of the time, including Joan Baez and Bob Dylan, at the 1963 March on Washington, when Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his famous I Have a Dream speech. They went to Washington at the invitation of Harry Belafonte. At the time, the country was saying a pledge of allegiance with liberty and justice for all, but it was fatuous, Peter Yarrow said, because it wasn't for all. People of color did not have justice. They did not have freedom. They couldn't vote. In Washington, D.C., if you were a person of color, you couldn't use a public bathroom. You couldn't use a water fountain unless it said for colored only. So when Peter, Paul, and Mary were approached by Harry Belafonte, of course we said yes. We were well prepared to sing what we sang. Other hits by Peter Yarrow and Peter, Paul, and Mary included Blowin' in the Wind, Leaving on a Jet Plane, Lemon Tree, Don't Think Twice, It's All Right, and Day is Done. Peter Yarrow was very active in a variety of civil rights and other political causes. Raised a secular Jew, later in life, he attended Shabbat services regularly on Friday nights at Upper West Side Manhattan synagogues near where he lived. Three Israelis were murdered last week by a Palestinian terrorist shooting at cars in the West Bank near Kedumim. Rachel Cohen and Aliza Rice were sisters-in-law, aged 73 and 70 years old. Elide Winkelstein was a 35-year-old father of two children. Israeli security forces and the IDF were searching for the Palestinian terrorists. Also last week, an Israeli hostage, Yusuf al-Ziadana, was found dead in Gaza. The IDF expressed concern that al-Ziadana's son Hamza is likely also dead. Hundreds of people attended his funeral in Israel. Al-Ziadana was a Bedouin Israeli taken captive by the Palestinian terrorists into Gaza on October 7, 2023, and killed in captivity. With the recovery of al-Ziadana's body, the number of known Israelis and other nations' hostages abducted alive by Hamas and killed rises to 30. Currently, 99 hostages remain in Gaza, 36 of whom have been declared dead. Their captivity has now lasted for over 15 months. Israeli soldiers who posted on social media about their service in Gaza are increasingly facing trouble abroad, sometimes prompting their swift evacuation from countries where they vacation. In the latest instance, an Israeli soldier traveling in Brazil left the country overnight after being warned by the Israeli government that he could soon face war crime charges there. Israeli officials have identified more than a dozen instances where soldiers traveling abroad have faced war crimes complaints. Knesset talked about this last week in a meeting. No soldier has yet faced any formal charges abroad. The scrutiny and guidance comes at an unprecedented moment for Israeli soldiers. Draftees and reservists have been conscripted to a war that has faced steep international condemnation, no matter the source of it. despite guidance against posting footage from Gaza on social media given to the soldiers by the IDF. Many do so anyway, allowing pro-Palestinian activists to identify and lobby against individual soldiers and their actions in Gaza, including when they subsequently travel abroad. The effort to dox Israelis who have served in the IDF while they travel is coordinated by an anti-Israel and anti-Semitic organization called the Hind Rajab Foundation. It's located in Belgium and run by two men who praise the Hamas-Palestinian terror atrocities of October 7, 2023, and who support Hezbollah and Hamas. And finally, a Massachusetts man who was arrested last week for threatening anti-Semitic violence had a gun, ammunition, and a Nazi flag, police said. Matthew Skouras, 34 years old, threatened to rape Jewish women and called for people to be shot outside of synagogues. The FBI alerted police to the threat. When they searched his home in Beverly, Massachusetts, north of Boston, they found the Nazi flag, six boxes of ammunition, several guns, and numerous other firearm parts. He had also $70,000 in cash. Skouras faces a range of charges related to illegal possession of firearms and a count of threats to destroy a place of worship. He has been arraigned. His next hearing is scheduled for next week. He is being held without bail. And that is the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. We welcome back to Jewish our guest this morning. Yerachmiel Stern is the executive director of Pesach Tikva, a network of counseling availability for frum ultra-Orthodox Jews in the Brooklyn community. Now, I think that a lot of people don't understand the wide variety of people that could be characterized as frum. You don't just deal in one, for example, Hasidic community, right?
Right. We deal with the Svarta community, the yeshivish community, the yeshivish, what they call now modern yeshivish community. Even within the Hasidic community, there are many sects. That's piece one. And then each Hasidic community in it of itself, say Williamsburg versus Borough Park, for an example, they're entirely different. They have a different mindset. They have different inclinations, even if they're from the same sect itself. So it's very subcategorized.
Two Jews, three opinions, four sects, apparently, within the same area. Are there language challenges sometimes to some of the people come in that speak primarily Yiddish, for example, or other languages, Hebrew?
Yes, tremendous language challenges. Actually, the most long-standing, notorious challenge was Yiddish. But having been in the field now and running this operation for years, the most difficult language to find competent therapy for in America for Jews is Hebrew. Hebrew is the biggest struggle. People don't know. There's not enough therapists that know Hebrew on a level that they can conduct therapy in. But Yiddish is also an issue for different reasons. A lot of Hasidic Jews and kids and their sons and daughters are seeking therapy. So you need a wide array of therapists who know Yiddish, and they need to know that same dialect. So it's because of the law of numbers, Yiddish could be also a very sought-after thing. But because of the lack of supply, Hebrew is actually the hardest, language to find.
What kinds of problems, and I know this is a very broad area, what kinds of problems are people most likely to come to you with from the frum community?
These days, I mean, there's a lot of, unfortunately, believe it or not, there are a lot of marital issues. The world's stressors have taken a toll on marriages. And there are many reasons why marriages sort of limp around. The marriage limps.
Right.
Financial stress and there's a lot of marital issues out there. And helping couples stay together and teaching them how to be married. And a lot of them did not get that education. That education, I think, lacks a little bit, actually. So, or a lot. So that's been a big issue.
I was going to ask, it's common for frum Jews to marry at a very young age, and the preparation they get for marriage may not be very comprehensive. Is this a factor in the counseling that you do, in the marital counseling that you provide?
Yes, I think these couples have a wake-up call, and they're sensing that the rest of the world, at least, you know, the rest of the world that have successful marriages, because, you know, marriage is not as in vogue in this country as it should be, but, you know, but the rest of the world who are successfully married, they're sensing, wait a second, I'm missing out on something. And they go to a therapist, and they're sort of, the therapist is making up for lost time. The therapist is sort of repairing the lack of knowledge they had going into marriage, and the lack of knowledge they started their marriage. And this could happen 5 years in, a year in, 10 years in. So a lot of these issues set in, and the therapist is now re-educating them on the ABCs of marriage and communication and everything that goes with marriage, like way late into the game. It's couples work is I would say, the hardest form of therapy out there. The absolute. That's just a personal opinion.
My wife is a therapist. She agrees. She thinks family therapy is easier than couples therapy. And she's not working in the from world. When people come to you, do they expect you to come from a, you know, this is the Torah's perspective on it, or do they expect you to approach it in some different way, and are they comfortable with that?
The Hasidic community in specific, they're not so, it's interesting, I'm going to, you know, split hairs a little bit.
That's very Jewish of you to split hairs, I have to say. It's Talmudic almost. A little pilpul for us, please.
Yes, a little pilpul. I'm down. I'm down with some pilpul. But the Hasidic community in specific, their mindset is more that their rabbi, or what they call their dayan. Their dayan is like the rabbi that sort of paskins the halachas for them, more so than their rabbi, who's more considered a rebbe, an influencer, a teacher. So the teacher is more of the, you know, the general rabbi. But then they have their person who kind of steers them right versus left. They typically, when their issues are charged with these Torah concepts you're referring to, they're not so much worried about what they're going to hear in the room from the therapist. They rather their dayan endorse the therapist. Once the therapist is background checked and endorsed, it's not as scrutinized what the therapist is going to broach in the room and how they're going to broach it, believe it or not. So it's interesting how it gets specific like that.
It is interesting. What's the most complicated issue to address in the from community from your perspective?
The most complicated issue. Wow, that's a good question. So there's the issue of technology and smartphones and married people engaging in things on their smartphone and the internet at large versus singles as well. The community, they're willing and open to tackling it, but not in the classic conventional way where it's like publicly accepting or publicizing that this is a grand problem. I mean, I'm not even saying it's a grand problem, you know, but it is an issue. And, you know, this is the one of the most foremost issues now plaguing our community is the technology and, you know, the lack of putting the brakes on where you can go on the phone, where you can go on the internet. And yes, you know, if people are healthy and they're intact, I believe people do have good self-control. But when life hits speed bumps, people don't know how to hit the brakes on their inhibitions. So they go wherever they need to go. And that is a huge problem. And the access to technology and the access to going anywhere in the world is so seamless, it's so easy, and it's a tremendous problem. It's a tremendous problem, and it's kind of fell into the therapist's domain to deal with this problem. But when the problem comes to the therapist, it's already a bad habit or an addiction had set in, or like a mental health issue. It becomes a mental health issue when it's unchecked.
You're essentially talking about addiction to certain kinds of, whether it's images or videos or whatever it is online. I know that there's been a strong effort in the from community to restrict access to, you know, putting limitations on phones. You really can't do that anymore, can you, successfully?
No, correct. You cannot restrict anything successfully anymore. Everything has a workaround. There's too much, air quote, good you'd need to access to just block out everything. it just doesn't, it's not long lasting.
So much of therapy today is driven by what insurance will cover, for example, and what will be paid for. Is that a factor for the work that you do also?
It is a factor, but especially in New York and in the greater New York area, the government has put a lot of resources into mental health, and the non-for-profits have been assisted a lot as of late, much more equal to the other federally qualified health centers. So there's a lot of access if you want. You see, the access is good too, you know, access to help.
Sure.
Obviously, we cover X amount of insurances. You know, there are clauses in which we have self-pays and sliding scales, and you can get pretty top-notch therapists for a self-pay that is beyond inexpensive.
Wow.
Or if need be, for free as well, because the subsidies that are kicking in for, you know, these kinds of operations have become much more hospitable to us, and it's allowed clients to get really good help. The insurance, you know, when I first started in my overseeing clinics and whatnot, we were so super, what they call hand to mouth. We build insurance, and every time someone couldn't pay or someone had a problematic insurance, the profit margin out of the good insurance would diminish to cover the person who couldn't pay. But today, there are government subsidies that we get, you know, federal qualified grants that we get that covers a lot of that. Not all of it, a lot of balancing the books, but a lot of it. And it allows us to say, okay, you know, we instead of hemming and hawing when a client cannot pay or a client has a lousy insurance, so to speak, we accept them much more. We've always accepted them, but we accept them much more readily, which creates a word of mouth, and people get help, good insurances or not. So it's become a different landscape for the better, actually.
So a final question. What's your favorite success story about doing therapy within the Froom, the ultra-Orthodox community?
So I'll tell you an interesting story. In the Williamsburg area of Brooklyn, because I wasn't from that actual community, but I spoke Yiddish, I would get clients, you know, high-functioning clients from that community. And so I had a client who was struggling, A, in his marriage. He was much older than me, and he's struggling, real struggles with his daughter, a young teenager at the time. And I had brought him over to see me in Borough Park with his wife in that clinic when I had started that clinic. And then it phased out. He was doing very well. It phased out. And recently I saw him at a bar mitzvah because he was managing the hall, and he couldn't stop telling me. I mean, this is like literally 10 years after the last time I saw him. He couldn't stop telling me how his whole life had changed for the better ever since that run with him. And his daughter, his married, the whole trajectory of his life. And I'm thinking like, wow, this, you know, I had forgotten about this guy for a decade, and this guy seemed to have me reverberating in his head for that whole decade.
Wow.
It was so bizarre. So I was just so moved by it. And he, you know, he told my board the same thing. He was so moved by seeing me. And it was just a very, very poignant story to know, like, wow, you really change people's lives here, or at least you're the shliach to do so, you know?
It's a great story. As a rabbi, I sometimes will run into people that tell me what a great thing I did for them, and I unfortunately often don't remember who they are. So you've got me on that one. I want to thank you, Rachmiel Stern, for a great visit here on Two Jewish. Is there a place that people can go to find out more about Pesach Tikva?
Check out our website, www.pesachtikva.org. It's PESACHTIKVAH.org. Our website is well-stocked, refurbished. It's a very nice website. It has a lot on there, and you'll get to know us quite well.
Thank you so much. When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week for another great edition of Too Jewish. Our guest will be Israel Ellis, author of the new book, The Wake-Up Call, Global Jihad and the Rise of Antisemitism in a World Gone Mad. And please join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush. Live in person, but also available on our Facebook page. Our playout this morning is a lovely a cappella version of the prayer for the State of Israel, Avinu, released by the Maccabees 613 and the Weishtuds. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of justice and peace.
Avinu, Avinu, Sheba Shamayim. Tzur Yisrael Negoala Avinu, Avinu Sheba Shamayim Tzur Yisrael Negoala Negoala
Barech, Barech Et Medinat Yisrael Reshit Tzmicha
Too Jewish is sponsored by Too Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.
Light one candle for the Maccabee children, with thanks their light didn't die. Light one candle for the pain they endured when their right to exist was denied. Light one candle for the terrible sacrifice justice and freedom demand. But light one candle for the wisdom to know when the peacemaker's time is at hand. Don't let the light go out. It's lasted for so many years.